The show you're listening to is called The Ron Van Dam Show because calling it the Mr. Sassy Pants Hour of Truth and Beauty just didn't test well with audiences, which is probably for the best. This is Mr. Sa... This is The Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Hi, I'm Mr. Sassy Pants.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
My pants are sassy. Hey, welcome to the program. It is not Mr. Sassy Pants Hour of Truth and Beauty. It is the Ron Van Dam Show, and I'm one of those people that are referred to in the title. You make yourself comfortable, will you? You want a finger sandwich? I'll show you a finger sandwich. Oh, it's radio. You can't see what I'm doing. But I'm showing you a finger sandwich. It is so funny to me. You relax. I'll take it from here. And I must tell you that consuming alcoholic beverages should be done very carefully and not in excess. However, it does heighten the believability and the excitement of this program. But again, not necessary. Okay, thank you for the theme song. Jason Shaw does our theme, composes, performs it. Thank you, sir. John Shanahan is your announcer and comedy writer on this program as well. And Nicole Reed books many of the national interviews that we have on the program. Case in point today, she booked a beauty. Oh my God, is it beautiful. My guest today is, believe it or not, Sesame Street. What? How's that possible? Well, not really. It's a story about Sesame Street. By a very interesting author. This happened a long time ago, decades and decades ago, almost as old as you are, before there was any Russian invasion like we're going through right now. Oh my God, stop it. But Russia apparently wasn't a wonderful country even back then. And Sesame Street, as you may know, was produced in many countries when at the height of its success. It's been around for a long time. We all grew up with Sesame Street, although there isn't actually a Sesame Street, really, with little Muppets on it. It's fictitious. You didn't know that. It's fictitious, but incredibly popular. Shaped the lives of many children, including those in other countries. Today's story, which is going to be the feature of our program today, takes place in Russia. And what they went through to produce the program in Russia, actually the American team set up and went over to Russia to produce Sesame Street in Russia as well. And they were met with some challenges that were kind of unexpected to them. They didn't see that coming. I would have, but they didn't. So what happened when they took that show to Russia? Well, that's the interesting part of the program, and that's what we're going to look at today. But in the meantime, how are you? Good to see you. You're looking very, very well. Did you shower yesterday? Because your hair looks good and everything. You see, what I'm doing here is complimenting you when obviously I don't know what you look like. I can't see you. Again, unless you have Comcast, those little cable boxes have cameras in them, and we can see you undressing at night before you go to bed. I say we because I subscribe to that particular function. But otherwise, I can't see you. But if I compliment you, you actually believe that I can see you or something, and it makes you feel good. And now we're closer, you see. And now you say, you know, I like Ron. I don't know what it is about him. I can't really tell, but I like him. You like me because I complimented you. That's the only reason you would possibly like me. So that's what's going on. And I talk about this a lot on this program, that, you know, phony things, yeah, they're phony and you shouldn't do them. But on the other hand, they really work. They really work. That's what telemarketers do. They throw you a phony bunch of crap, and they compliment you, or they tell you you won something. You're lucky. This is your lucky day. It's not your lucky day. It's your day of doom. That's because if people compliment you or tell you good things, you gyrate toward them. Who doesn't? That's a human quality. It's what we do. So if somebody compliments you on the way you look, or who you are as a person, like, you know what? I got to tell you something. You're a great person. I really like you. I think you're really good. That person will gyrate towards you. Do that. Do it on a first date. You know, just on a first date, just sit down and look at the other person and say, you know, I'm sorry. I just got to say, you're very attractive and you're a very cool person. That's how you start a relationship. You lie through your teeth. And of course, you don't lie unless you really think it could be true someday. But it does help things. People who compliment each other are very successful in their relationships. Am I a relationship expert? Yeah. No. Yes. No. See, I can't make up my mind. But you like me because I just complimented you. You look very good. You look younger than you did yesterday. You're looking younger every day. I don't know what it is about you, but you really look younger. And my God, you really have beautiful eyes. Oh, they light up a room. You have beautiful, beautiful eyes. I can't tell what color they are from here, but they are beautiful. That's all. See, are you melting? You're getting little shivers like, oh my God, this guy is, whoa, he's crazy likable. Well, that's my advice to you for today. Make other people feel good, even if it's not true. We do lie. We lie all the time. You know that. You know we lie. We lie to our kids about that Santa Claus thing. I mean, get the kids out of the room. I want to talk to you about something. Are they gone? Are they out? I'll wait. Are they out? Are they out yet? Hurry, get them out. I don't have all day. Santa Claus, Easter Bunny, Tooth Fairy. Who would believe that crap? But we present it in such a convincing manner, and it's so overwhelming. But it doesn't hurt anybody. It helps with a child's fantasy of life. They learn from a young age that what they're told is not true. And that's important. Because when you grow up, you can't grow up believing everything everybody tells you. You can't do that. You can't trust everybody. Because they'll scam the pants off of you. That's why we lie to our little kids about these fantasies about, you know, about the good fairy and you know, the Santa thing and the Easter boonies and the Tooth Fairy and all those things, you know, and it goes even further. It goes even further. But we do that so that when they get a little bit older, they say, "Yo, whoa, not everything people tell me is true." I mean, they didn't do it to hurt me or anything. I did get presents as a result and stuff like that and dollars under my pillow when I lost a tooth. So, okay, it wasn't a horrible thing. But at the same time, you lied to me. You told me it was true. You told me it really happens. You played it out. And so did all your friends in the country. It's a good, stable base for growing up and not believing everything that you hear. Because if you do grow up that way, and I know some people that believe everything that they hear, they're called Trump supporters. That was just a joke. It was kind of just a joke. Okay. My guest is going to join us momentarily. This is going to be fascinating. What was it like to produce Sesame Street in Russia? Not so easy and not so good. And we're going to find out all about that. But first, there's this short commercial break.
You love the great deals at Whatchamacallit's, your one-stop shop for that stuff you need. But did you know now you can have lunch there too? We're proud to announce the opening of Thingamabob Cafe, the restaurant that has those things you like. The breaded chicken thing with ham inside and the cream sauce? It's our weekly special with those roasted potatoes and that vegetable you wanted to try for just $8.99. The thing that's like a folded pizza and you can eat it with one hand? Get two for $12.99 at Thingamabob Cafe. That pasta you had at that nice place the Johnsons took you to last time you visited? The one with tomato and sausage and maybe it was spinach or something? Something green anyway. It's just $11.99 with garlic bread and that soup that's like the one your uncle used to make before the accident. And how about dessert? This week only, that little chocolate cake that's all gooey and warm on the inside, what do they call that? Well, we call it delicious, and it's just $3.99 this week at Thingamabob Cafe, the new restaurant that has those things you like. We'll see you, you know, whenever.
Natasha Lance Rogoff joins us now. She's the author of Muppets in Moscow. This is a crazy story. It's the unexpected crazy true story of making Sesame Street in Russia. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
This is fascinating. How long ago did this occur?
Almost 30 years. Ooh. I mean, it's kind of amazing to write a memoir, but to have materials from that long ago. I carried boxes around for 30 years.
Yeah, wow. This is fascinating. I guess I've got to ask, how did this ever come about that Sesame Street would be altered and produced for Russia?
Well, it was after the fall of the Soviet Empire, mm-hmm. in, you know, after 1991. And, you know, the whole Western world at that time was euphoric, mm-hmm. about, you know, the collapse of communism.
Right.
And actually, then-Senator Biden spearheaded congressional approval for a Russian version of Sesame Street. And the idea was that the Muppets would be, you know, the ideal ambassadors to, mm-hmm. teach idealistic values, tolerance, inclusivity. And also give children the skills they needed to survive in this, you know, new open society with, yeah. greater freedom of expression and a free market. So that's how it all started. I was tapped to do the show after, I think, in 1992.
Were you producing for Sesame Street in the States at the time?
No. I was not a children's television producer. I had been making documentaries in what was then the Soviet Union,
right?
Mostly about underground culture.
Wow.
and embedded with, you know, the conservative fascist communists who did not want to see their country overthrown.
Right.
They were on the far right side of politics in the Soviet post-Soviet society. Wow. At that time. So I had been doing very serious documentaries for PBS. So no children's TV experience at the time.
But I guess they thought that you were familiar with the geography and the geopolitical situations, and you had relationships with people there already?
I was working with a lot of TV producers over there, mm-hmm. mostly film people in film.
Right.
Because it, you know, television wasn't as sophisticated,
right.
in
or
Russia
allowed.
At that time,
yes. Yeah.
as it was. Well, there really wasn't that much. There was, you know, there wasn't a lot of dramatic episodic TV.
Right.
And so, you know, when Sesame Street approached me and we were going to do 52 half hours,
mm-hmm.
That had never been done in Russia before. In the Soviet Union. They had, I think, the longest number of episodes that were ever produced before our show was 12.
Wow.
So it was really like a moonshot,
yeah.
to do this.
Crazy.
But fascinating. I mean, the idea, you know, when they came to me and asked, I was just like, you know, did you just watch my film, my very serious, dark film? You know, so the exact opposite of the lighthearted, you know, sweet Muppets. But it was incredible what they were doing. I mean, Sesame Street at that time, it's a nonprofit,
right.
And they had programs in a lot of different countries, but mostly in Western Europe and in Mexico and Latin America.
Mm-hmm.
But this was a bit of a stretch because obviously we weren't doing it with the national broadcaster, because the country was really just in a state of complete collapse at that time.
Yeah, that's the interesting part, because one would think that at this point you can walk into Russia and it's a different place. But from what I've read here, this was not a cakewalk. This was not a celebration. This was like dangerous stuff, even though that change had taken place.
Yeah, I mean, it was more dangerous than I had anticipated when I went over there, because I had been there before and mm-hmm. I speak Russian. And so, you know, I thought, how difficult could it be? You know, bring the Muppets to Moscow. This will be easier than making a documentary. Yeah. And, this will be I need the break. You know, I need something that'll be more fun and positive
and happy,
you know, something with purpose.
Right.
That I mean not that the documentaries don't have purpose, but just something for children. It felt right.
Sure.
But it, you know, in the first year, you know, our first sponsor was nearly killed in a car bombing.
Whoa.
And I had been in that car 3 weeks before the 3 weeks before the bombing.
Wow.
So this was pretty shocking. And then it got worse because the broadcast partner that we had, who was our confidant in the mm-hmm. beginning and then joined us and then, agreed to air the show in principle, as they say in Russian.
Uh-huh.
And, he was a great man trying to bring press freedom to Russia in the 1990s and fight corruption inside the TV station. This is Vlad Listyev, and he was just gunned down, when he left
assassinated.
The TV station. Yeah.
Wow.
This happened again, too. Like, there was another one that we then worked with another broadcast partner, and that person was also assassinated.
Oh,
so it was a surreal story, this juxtaposition of a trying to make a puppet show in a post-communist country, and then the violence, the chaos, the extreme poverty that a lot of people were experiencing.
Yeah.
And this is the same narrative actually that Putin uses again and again about this period to justify his authoritarianism.
Yeah. And then I understand that your production office was actually raided by soldiers.
Yes. Yes, and they this was inside Russia's largest television station, and we had an office on the executive floor, which had been given to us by someone who I knew very well, who mm-hmm. donated the office, which is why we were on that floor. And that entire floor was taken over by soldiers with AK-47s, and my team was, they were inside, they had all the scripts, our computer equipment, everything was there, including our mascot, which was, Elmo, a life-size Elmo.
Mm-hmm.
And the soldiers even seized the Muppet, took that away, put a lock on the door, and that was the last time we saw any of that.
Wow.
So we had to start from scratch again.
I'm surprised you even stayed there at that point.
Yeah, well, my boyfriend at the time, who's now my husband, was also very surprised and begging me, to back out. And, it was incredible the things that were happening. It was so surreal that it was almost like, watching a car wreck, and you couldn't leave. I'm just like, rubbernecking past it, but at the same time, being in it. And
unbelievable.
You have to look at even what's happening today in with Russia and with Ukraine. And, after the Soviet Union collapsed, there was this real sense of hope that, maybe this could make a difference. Maybe, this was a way, our small way of, helping Russia to transition to a more open society, to join the free world.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine today what that felt like 30 years ago, that people, everybody, in the Western world, for the most part, thought, wow, this is amazing. This is a historical transition after 70 years of communism. It's really possible, and I can be part of it, you know.
Yeah.
So that's what it was. It was an amazing experience, and we had over 400 Moscow artists represented from all places all over the former Soviet Union, from Ukraine, Armenia, Georgia, the animators, a ton of animators from Georgia especially. And this entire team worked together with the American team. And, it became a huge hit. It was on Russia's two top TV stations, and it ran for 10 years, well into Putin's era. Yeah. So if you meet Russians now, like on the street, many of them have been fleeing from our team because they had been speaking out against the war.
Right.
And they will tell you, they grew up on Sesame Street. They'll start singing songs from the song, from the show, the same way we do, in the U.S.
Wow. So you really did make the impact. It was worth it.
I'd say it had a tremendous impact. Yeah. It was a huge hit. But the one thing I was thinking about, I woke up at 4 a.m. and realized that the young people that are leaving Russia now, because they don't want to fight and going over the borders as the borders are still open, they're in their, late 20s and early 30s. So they grew up watching Ulitsa Sazam.
Huh.
Yeah. It's a different kind of impact. But also the Ukrainians on the other side that are the same age cohort, they also are the Ulitsa Sazam generation.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say. You say, what was the impact? In terms of numbers and the show's reach across 11 time zones, one seventh of the world's surface, it was huge.
Yeah. But
it's heartbreaking to see what's happening now. Absolutely. To see where we were 30 years ago and where we are today.
Yeah. Well, that's the cycle of life as far as that thing's concerned, I guess.
Very sad cycle.
As interesting as this is, did you learn anything about the culture, any lighthearted parts of the book?
Oh, the book is actually really funny. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that sounds, incredible, but with all the, the violence that was going on. But the book is very, very funny. I mean, the Russian team, the Moscow team, there were all kinds of people there, but they didn't want our Muppets in the beginning and, mm-hmm. Wanted instead their traditional hardwood Muppets, and reminded us that they had a tradition dating back to the 16th century.
Yeah.
And then with the meeting with their puppet maker, their top puppet maker, he pulls two puppets out of a sack and, they immediately start hitting each other. I'm going to kill you, he says.
My God.
And then I'm looking at that, and that was like, everybody's laughing, and I'm like, okay, this puppet on puppet violence is very Sesame Street.
It's like a Nightmare Punch and Judy.
Yeah, totally.
Wow.
But at the same time, there was incredible, like the show, many of the American Sesame Street puppeteers and people who work on the U.S. show just thought this show was artistically brilliant. Mm-hmm. And it was.
Hmm.
It was so beautiful. We had people from the, Russia's film industry, theater industry. We pulled in all the top people to our team.
Mm-hmm.
And the puppet that was created, the new Muppets that were based on Slavic culture, were incredible. I mean, so the first puppet that's the body, full body puppet, like Big Bird. He's larger than Big Bird, and he's a tree spirit. So kind of a blue hound-like structure, hound-like puppet with pieces of moss and leaves and twigs sewn into his outer costume because he's a part of nature.
Oh.
And he lives inside a 40-foot tree.
Oh.
So... I would say the book is very ironic and moves a lot like a thriller because of what happens that's so unexpected.
Did Jim Henson have any part in this transformation?
Well, Jim's legacy had a great part because obviously he created the Muppets, but he had passed away.
Right. But did those people participate? His crew, his Oz, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. The Jim Henson production team built the Muppets. They were part of the design and creation team. And the designer of that particular Muppet that I described, whose name is Zeli Boba, his name is, the designer is Ed Christie. And I just saw him recently. And he talked about how he loved creating the Muppets for Ulitsa Sazam, which means Sesame Street in Russian. Because he said, you know, everybody knows what a frog looks like.
Yeah.
Everybody knows what a bird looks like.
Right.
But nobody knows what a tree spirit looks like. I thought that was wonderful.
Interesting. I see here in my notes that a lot of people in Russia do love their vodka, as they do in the country here, but probably more so there. What is it like there? Is vodka like water?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean. Like, is it drunk like water? Yes.
I see in your book that it becomes a part of everyday life and business.
Oh
itself.
My God! Yeah. It was definitely a part of the meetings everywhere. And you know, in most cases, I was the only woman in, you know, I'd say 99.9% of my meetings trying to raise funds for the show.
Uh-huh.
And there was a lot of drinking, and I think that, you know, at some point during the course of the story, I become pregnant, and so I got out of drinking, you know, later on in the show, which was a great relief. But yeah, it's hard to keep up.
A lot of peer pressure, yeah. This is one of the most fascinating subject matters I've interviewed in quite some time, I've got to tell you, Natasha, and this book is amazing.
Thank you.
No, it's true.
Thank you so much.
What are you working on these days? Are you working on anything else now?
Well, the book just came out. Mm-hmm. It's only been 5 weeks, and I did a book tour around the country, which was, you know, fascinating to see all the people who resonated with the story. And the book has become a bestseller. And so I've been doing a lot of talks. You know, particularly because of the time right now, there's extreme, you know, interest in Russia, in what's going to happen, and how did we get here? Which, you know, the challenges that we had in making the puppet show, in making Sesame Street, reveal a lot about the culture. They reveal a lot about the, you know, the ways in which we're different from Russia as well as the same. But I think that it's, you know, what I'm hearing from readers is it's an incredibly deep dive into the culture in a way that's really unusual and fresh because you're doing it through the story of the Muppets.
Yeah, I've got to tell you. And this is just between the two of us, even though everybody's listening. if there was a movie that depicted this slice of life, this effort that took place, I think it'd fill a theater up to the ceiling. I mean, what would be more of a draw than this? I don't know if it's been discussed or what.
I agree with you. I agree with you.
Oh,
and
God.
I mean, as I was writing it, I mean, I am a filmmaker first and an author second. And I was very aware of that, you know, how cinematic the story was. I was even aware of that, as was everybody else, as we were living it.
Yeah.
I mean, most of us inside the story felt like we were in a movie, you know, as things were happening, because it was surreal. I mean, can you imagine you're trying to make a children's television show, an educational television show, and you work for a nonprofit, and yet you know, all these people are getting assassinated around you.
I mean, it's the perfect motion picture. And on top of that, the Muppets drawn into everybody's life who's alive now. So, I mean, man, what could be a better deal?
Yeah, they're part of our family.
Yeah, it's not like there's no connection here. There's a strong connection. So anyway, I look forward to seeing it in the theaters.
Me too.
Yes. Well, you can make it happen. Okay. Where the book's available everywhere, obviously.
Everywhere, yeah.
Okay.
And at your indie bookstores, especially.
Yes. So. It's Muppets in Moscow, The Unexpected Crazy True Story of Making Sesame Street in Russia. But Muppets in Moscow probably do it if you're searching for it. Is there a website where people can follow you or whatever?
Yes, it's just my name, NatashaLanceRogoff.com.
Mm-hmm. It's a cool name, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Pleasure speaking to you. Continued success. And I got to tell you, I'm looking forward to more from you.
Pleasure talking with you very much.
Well, thank you to my guests. Amazing. I'll be back again on Monday with a brand new program. But until then, oh my God, I wish you peace.